crops. Nearly half of the Illinois corn crop will probably be a bust because it has been too wet to plant and is now almost too late to plant. Soybeans, too, are threatened because of the ever-present spring rain. Congressman Rodney Davis of Taylorville joins us to talk about that and other issues. Representatives of the Illinois Farm Bureau are suggesting a federal disaster declaration for the entire state because of the flooding and soggy fields. Is that merited?
Well, I'm certainly optimistic that we'll be able to get more crops in the ground over the next few weeks. And the farmers I talk to are actually seeing some progress right now. But I have concerns. I'm worried about them, too. If we continue to get some forecasted precipitation, which we've been lucky over the last few days that forecasts were not as accurate as they could have been, if you look at last week's forecast, I'm optimistic that you're going to see a slower progression. But that's not going to take away the fears and the anxieties of our farmers who likely will have to take the preventive planning coverage that's part of the Farm Bill and the risk management tools that we allow at the federal government. This is a big concern for our farmers, but it should be a big concern for those in the industry, because if crops don't get planted, prices for the crops that do go up, and that means it goes up for everybody.
So I'm not hearing that you're quite there yet on a disaster declaration.
Oh, no, no. I if it gets to the point where a disaster declaration is going to be needed, we're going to help lead the charge. Look, I think we may have, if projections don't hold that the rivers in the Mississippi River Valley and Illinois River Valley are not going to be as bad as once anticipated, if that changes, which it could with a couple of bad storms, I said just yesterday we could be looking at asking Congress for another nationwide disaster supplemental bill. And that would be reminiscent of what was done in 1993 and 1995 in the Mississippi River areas. And this, Charlie, is one thing I thought about right when I got elected. I was a brand new member of Congress and debating on whether or not to vote for every version of Superstorm Sandy relief. And I remember going to my New Jersey and New York colleagues and saying, I'm going to vote for every version of this bill because I believe that there's one thing the federal government should do right, and that's disaster relief. And one day, I'm going to be coming back to you because my district is going to experience a disaster along the Mississippi River, and I want you to remember me.
You're here in town today to highlight some opioid grants, one to Peoria-based OSF, the Sisters of the Third Order of St. Francis in Litchfield, and the other one to Chestnut Health Systems for work in several southern Illinois counties, Clinton, Bond, and Montgomery. Tell us about that, would you?
Well, what these grants do is they take local organizations, and those local organizations have put plans together to really localize what they think is going to work best to reduce the opioid epidemic in our communities. These communities, Chestnut is going to be operating their procedures down in Bond and Montgomery County that I serve. Rural areas have much different needs when addressing drug addiction and opioid addiction than somewhat more urban areas like Bloomington Normal.
How do those needs differ?
Well, they differ, number one, transportation. Number two, location for beds that may be available for treatment and facilities that may be available for treatment. And then there sometimes may be a perception that you may not want to drive your car into the parking lot in a smaller community because somebody may see it there and know that you are there being treated. So it is a different type of scenario that these grants allow local professional organizations like Chestnut, for example, to go into that community, take the expertise they have in communities like Bloomington Normal, bring it down to rural Illinois and places like Bond, Clinton, and Montgomery counties, and address some of those institutional concerns that many of our rural residents have. And I used to kind of chuckle when people would tell me, well, people are afraid to get treatment because they don't want to see their car here. That's a real big deal. If you're dealing with an addiction, you don't want people to know it in many cases. And you're certainly not going to park your car in the front stall at the local opioid recovery center.
So is this going to be a template for a larger effort to tackle the opioid crisis? I mean, they're a couple hundred thousand bucks apiece in those two separate service areas, and they're going to handle 1 to 4 caseworkers and staffers to oversee it. Isn't the need bigger than that?
And the need's always bigger than that, but we've invested historic amounts of revenue and money into the opioid problems that we have in this country right now. Over the last Congress, we had hundreds of opioid addiction-related bills that we put together into one piece of legislation or another, multiple pieces of legislation that have provided hundreds of millions of dollars to our local communities. This is the result of the work that we've already done in Congress at the request of many who are fighting this fight on the front lines. These resources are what they asked for. This flexibility is what they asked for. And this is why we worked together in a very bipartisan way in the last Congress to allow these funds to be distributed to organizations that you mentioned and to serve our communities, both rural and urban.
Where do you think the nation is in addressing the opioid crisis? Are there new approaches that will tackle areas yet unserved, or have we got a handle on it and the rest is processing and catching up with the lag? Frame that for us, would you, in your view?
In my opinion, Charlie, I don't think we have our arms around the entire addiction process when it comes to opioids. I think we are doing a lot better when it comes to prescriptions being given out willy-nilly after minor procedures by our medical community. I think they're taking a second look before they write that opioid prescription. I can remember getting a minor procedure one time, 19, 20 years ago, and I was given a prescription for opioids. Took one and said, I'm never taking one of these again. I couldn't barely walk down my hallway in my house without trying to stabilize myself. I didn't use them, but I can't tell you when I threw them away either, because I'm sure they sat in my cabinet. So I don't think people will have that same problem nowadays, 20 years later, because doctors are more vigilant that you may want to try something a little less than an opioid to deal with any pain that may occur from the minor procedure like the one I got.
Illinois has tried medical marijuana. Do you think that's a good idea on the federal level?
Yes, I've been a supporter of medical marijuana, and statistics don't lie. Whenever medical marijuana is implemented into a state, opioid addiction goes down, and the rates of opioid addiction go down. I believe medical marijuana is exactly what I'm talking about. When doctors now have the option, if they believe that their patient is going to benefit from a much less addictive pain medicine like medicinal marijuana, I think they ought to have the opportunity to prescribe it.
Is that a non-starter on the Hill, or is that possible sometime soon?
Well, I think we're going to have the debate with more and more states like Illinois allowing recreational marijuana. We're going to have the debate on whether or not to take marijuana off the list of and the schedule of controlled substances that it's on. I'm somebody who I knew this was coming. I've been for years a state's rights person, and I believe it's the state's rights to be able to have their citizenry through referendum or through the legislature enact things like legalizing recreational marijuana. We ought to be able to make sure that those legally operating businesses that have been operating in states like Colorado and Washington and Oregon for years ought to have the ability to bank those dollars in our local financial institutions. I mean, I don't like to see businesses that are legally operating in any state have to worry about carrying loads and loads of cash around at a vault and have security when there's a local bank or credit union right down the street that they ought to be able to bank with like every other legally operating small business.
Well, in Illinois, the debate has also shifted to what about these folks who were convicted of marijuana possession in the war on drugs, and should their records be expunged? How would that work on the federal level, and where do you stand on that broad issue?
Well, what we've seen in Illinois, and I don't have the exact details of the expungement, you know, what that entails, so I'm not as up to date on that since they passed that bill. But federally speaking, I've always been in favor and have voted for criminal justice reform measures. I think it's tragic that what we've seen over the years, especially during the enforcement of anti-meth measures that we saw just a couple of years ago, You saw many people that were drug users serving time in prison and longer sentences, being a petty drug user, than people like Jared, the Subway guy, who was a pedophile. I think it's tragic when you have those petty drug users in jail longer than him, but just because he had money and a better lawyer doesn't mean he deserves more of a break than somebody who has an addiction.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker talking with U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville. He's in town talking about opioid grants to Chestnut Health Systems. Let's move to tariffs. The president has suggested that tariffs are necessary against Mexico, and he wants, in exchange for holding off on those tariffs, Mexico to stop and deal more effectively with the undocumented immigration problem at the border. Is that an appropriate policy measure to use economic sanctions for a non-economic issue, do you think?
Well, it's certainly not the first administration that would do something like that. I'm not in favor of them using tariffs against Mexico right now to address immigration issues, but we can't close our eyes to the crisis that's happening in our border. We have the highest amount of individuals entering our country illegally along the southern border than we've had in decades. Something has to be done. But my message to the administration is that we had the solution on the table last July with two bills that would have addressed all of the president and the administration's concerns about border security, would have fully funded a border security structure along our southern border, would have addressed the institutional problems in our immigration system, too, for those who are legally going through the process that takes too long and it costs too much. But it also would have provided a path to legal status for every single DACA kid and dreamer that's in this country right now. We would have also made sure that no families could be separated at the border unless anybody's suspected of human trafficking or something like that. That bill got zero Democrat votes. That bill only got, I believe, 112 of us Republicans voted for it. The president came in, told us personally as Republicans he was for it, and then right when it was crunch time, said, well, maybe we can solve this after the elections. That's not leadership, and the administration knows that using tariffs now, when we had a solution that was bipartisan, should have been a bipartisan solution before, is not the answer. I'm worried that this new tariff proposal is going to knock us out of any chances of getting the USMCA through the House of Representatives. I believe with the new USMCA, I think it's a great deal. I think it's better for our farmers, it's better for our manufacturers, has worker protection standards that weren't in the last NAFTA for countries like Mexico and the United States and Canada, and we need to get this through. This administration has the ability, if this goes through and they can achieve bilateral agreements with China, Japan, South Korea, the UK, and also the EU, and they have the chance to go down as one of the greatest administrations in our nation's history when it comes to global free trade. But they're on the precipice, Charlie, of being the worst ever if they don't get any of this done. And this tariff threat takes our eye off the ball when it comes to passing the USMCA through Congress.
Do you think people who think like you will have sway with the president? He seems pretty intent on this.
Well, the president is intent on a lot of issues. The president's the president. He's the first president we've had in our lifetime with no military, no governmental experience. The people of this country said they wanted somebody to come directly from the private sector and be president of the United States. He has a different way of doing things than presidents of the past. That's what the American people elected. And we've got to give him his due right to be able to make decisions. But I'm still going to stand up, and many of my colleagues are going to stand up and say, we think you need to do something different here.
Republican Representative Rodney Davis's 13th District stretches from the Metro East area to Bloomington-Normal.